Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. And Fred was just asking me, what do I do if someone presents me with a ream of paper or a wheelbarrow full of spreadsheets, which is some form of data analysis, and I'm asked what it is, or I'm asked to help them review it, complete it, fulfill it, validate it, anoint it, bless it, or whatever it is they want me to do for this data analysis to make it valid and whole. What is it? What's the first thing I do? And my answer, without any shadow of a doubt, is what is the decision that this is going to inform?
Yep.
Tell me that before I even look at anything.
Yeah. And that shuts down about half of them.
Right.
You go, well, if somebody's going to use this, what?
Mm-hmm. And if they can't answer it, invariably, unless I'm being paid by the hour. But yeah. even then, I tend to say, well, if this is not going to have any impact, why should I do what you're asking? I mean, there's no point to either of us spending time on this data analysis if it's not going to change anyone's behavior. And then that starts off a whole new conversation, which is very important to have first. Sometimes there is a decision, they just didn't realize that they had to articulate it well at the start. But a lot of the time it's just fishing expeditions, which take up a lot of time and money.
I mean, but there are plenty of valid things. If somebody's looking at field data and they're looking for, are we on target or do we have a problem?
Right? Mm-hmm.
And okay, that's a fair one. It's a monitoring activity. Another one might be, here's a block diagram. We're flushing it out with all this information and we're doing the calculations to say, are we close enough to our target? We can launch, right? And that's a decision point. Are we ready to go or not? What are our risks? Those are kinds of things. And it might be, I have two vendors and we did some experiments and do we go with vendor A or vendor B, right? Mm-hmm. It's a comparison.
Yeah.
Right? There's many, many reasons why we do data analysis. And unfortunately, some of them, which that your question will ferret out, is we always do this. We've been doing this forever. And well, so who's using it? Where's it going? Is it because I can sense the next question is, well, then is this data and this analysis going to help them actually make a decision, right? If you tested three samples for 20 minutes, is that good enough for this particular decision or not, right? Is that going to illuminate something useful for them? You can do all kinds of cool stuff with three samples and create confidence bounds and all kinds of wizardry graphics and even do a Pareto if you want to. You got three samples. But so is it going to help? Is it going to inform what the decision that's tied to it? And that, yeah. It's really, really hard. I think I ran into this early on. I was first learning about just basic confidence intervals. And I had some data and I calculated a confidence bound on it. And I had the question, it's a philosophical question, is, well, what confidence level should I use? And the mentor I had at the time in the book I had says, well, you got to ask the decision maker, how much risk are they willing to take? And so, and he said, but most people just use 90%. It's a starting point. Just put that on there. Okay. So put it on there. And my boss took a look at the data and goes, well, that doesn't look right. Make it 50%. Or, well, that still doesn't look right. Let's make it 20%. There, now we hit the target. That's good. Let's use 20% confidence and drive on. I started thinking about this gum. I don't think he's actually understanding the risk part of this thing. It was a whole different problem.
That's right. It's a business decision more than anything else.
Oh, yeah. And so, I mean, I was going to start with, when you said, you know, the first thing I would answer with, and I was expecting you to say, is where'd this data come from? What's the nature of this the data that it's coming from? I go back to my boss at that same company as a general manager. If you showed him anything, where's the data? Show me the data. he was way ahead of the, was it Moneyball, I think, Show Me the Money. This guy was,
yeah,
show me the data. It was his mantra. And I don't know that he had a stats background or mathematics, but he wanted to understand the nature and strength of the underlying assumptions and data before he would look at the analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he got burned way too many times with garbage in, garbage out kind of situations.
No, I completely, right. Completely agree.
So let's say a vendor comes in and they give you a data sheet and it says, I mean, my favorite example, of course, is that it has 50,000 hours MTBF rounded off to four significant digits. And, you know, or it has a graph with a great big fat line on it going, here's the, you know, the Weibull plot. And it's vaguely scaled and it's hard to read and all that stuff. What would you ask the vendor? Use that example.
What would I ask the vendor? So just to clarify, you're talking about a scenario where they are providing you a component, a system, assembly, a subsystem, and they give you this vague scatter plot. What is it that I would ask them? Well,
no, the challenge. Are you crazy? No.
Yes, well, sorry.
That once didn't work.
I mean, in that context, you would be forewarned to an extent, as in you should have some requirements, some specifications you impose upon said vendor. So you should know what it is you're asking. So what they're required to do for their product to be okay when it comes to reliability.
Well, in some industries, that's true. When there's a long process and you're contracting them to do the reliability work, for example, as part of the delivery. But vast majority of our decisions are based on a data sheet and a sales guy saying, oh, this will work for you, right?
That's true. And it maybe ask them what it is that what metric are you saying this supports? And if they say the MTBF, well, you can listen to the 6,000 podcasts you've participated on in that regard to get understand why that's not cool. But one thing that I often find works is you ask them, okay, how does it help my business? And it's not quite as simple as that. You say, okay, so we manage a facility where it has to be open this many hours a day. We have 3 hours for doing this and this, that, and the other. How does this product support the way I do business, my operations, the day-to-day behaviors of my people and my equipment?
Mm-hmm.
And one of two things happens. The first one is tap dancing, where the salesperson clearly doesn't know what they're talking about and just starts spouting off. And
yeah, you can hear that very easily. So, well, we've shipped 6,347,000 of these and they all are working. You know, everybody else loves these things. They're great. They're great. And like, okay, that's not an answer.
No.
if you don't have a call support center and just ignore all failures, I call it the Dilbert solution or Dilbert solution is, well, then you can support that argument that nobody's told you about failures, but they just can't tell you about failures, so they don't. You know, so have a 1 month warranty, and after that, you just blame it on them. And sure, you're going to have a great field data experience. It's fictitious, right? Yeah, you hear that all the time. Oh, we ship millions of these things. Blah blah blah. That's all right. Well, have you put any of them in a tank?
Yep.
What's your experience there? You know, or the other answer you get is, well, our yield at the factory is at 98%, right? Okay, let's break that down a little bit. All right, is that first pass yield with no hand touching and no modifications, like on a circuit board? And they go, oh, blah, blah. No, it's final yield. And anything that survives to the end is good. And if it gets into the package before it fails, we call that a good one. And like, okay, that's pretty useless. Let's ask some more questions here. I often see when they give me just an MTBF number, which is way too common, or if they're smart and they know they're talking to me, they'll give me a 98% survive 2 years or some reliability measure. And they say, well, what's this based on? Oh, we did a Mill Handbook 217 parts count 15 years ago, and it's still good.
Sure.
We updated the copyright on it, so it's still good. All right. In other words, you really don't know.
Yep.
Yeah, it's Yeah, it, you know, the other way I look at it too is if you're picking a component or a subsystem from a vendor and you're comparing vendors, for example. And so I know my analysis is going to be a comparison, and I get two vendors and they give me data. I usually ask the question of, well, what's going to fail? How long will it last? And how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because my next webinar, which should come out about the time this podcast comes out, is going to be, how do you interpret standards-based testing? So somebody says, well, we did IEC, blah, 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 85 degrees Celsius, 85 RH for 1,000 hours, and therefore it must be good. Really? Your product works at cryogenic temperatures. If it gets above that, it just fails. How in the world did you pass that test? Well, we didn't power the units during the test. And then we put it back in the cryo cell to make sure it was still working.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We couldn't pass the test otherwise, so we didn't do it that way. So we're like, okay, well, then why passing that standard, why does that make any difference? You know, how does that relate to anything? But if you can tell me what's going to fail in my application, which is to your point, Chris, of, well, how's this going to work in my facility, right? How's it not going to work in my facility? Where's the limits, the constrictions? What do we need to pay attention to? And if they can't tell me that, if they can't tell me how their product's going to fail, and I've actually had people tell me, it'll never fail. It'll be fine. You'll never have a problem with that. Okay.
It's it doesn't quite work like that. And I think, and that sort of, that is, in a way, you're talking about the sales pitch from a vendor, prospective vendor versus someone who's coming up to you with a very pure data analysis
mm-hmm.
body of efforts that they want you to help with. You could obviously, a reliability engineer should be able to make a salesperson of an organization who hasn't done the analysis look quite silly. I think that's one of the things.
You also can make them look really good too if you don't ask good questions.
That's true.
Goes both ways. But yeah, so somebody in your organization is looking at field data and they bring you a Weibull plot and it's got a little curve in it. They go, that looks interesting. I mean, my inclination oftentimes is to go, oh, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. You know, can you explain that? And yet I learned the hard way, and this comes from that general manager I worked with years and years ago, is, well, what's underlying this data? How did you clean the data? Where did sources did it come from? What's included and not included? What assumptions did you make? Where's the actual data points on here? You just draw a line. You're showing me the fit. How well is the fit actually fit? How well does it actually describe the data set? And how do you know? You can get into some pretty gnarly data analysis teardown. Yet at the end of the day, if I'm going to have to make a decision to start or stop production based on that squiggle on a line, I probably should understand it at that level.
Mm-hmm. Which comes back to, why is this data analysis being conducted in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
Because that gives you everything. I mean, and there's sometimes been scenarios where people have been misguided with their data analysis, particularly if they, all they're trying to do is just find the weak points of a design.
Mm-hmm.
Or the likely weak points of a design to inform the design effort. Now, you don't need to have, 16 layers of Monte Carlo simulation to lock in the confidence bounds beyond any reproachable rebuttal. That's not the point. So sometimes we can really, you have to sort of talk some engineers down from going too far in terms of the need for information to have confidence bounds.
Yep.
And it all comes back to, what is it we're trying to do? We're trying to do something relatively simple in terms of informed design engineers. I can't escape the whole, the question of this podcast was, what do you do when someone asks you to help with data analysis? It all revolves around the decision. What is the decision that's going to be made? Let's confirm that the information needed for that decision is, and then we'll look at the data analysis, and if the data analysis is principally going to provide that information when it's complete and done correctly. That's great. Let's go through this, the spreadsheet or the MATLAB file or anything, whatever it is that you did the data analysis on.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can see a complete disconnect between what the decision is and where the data analysis is heading, then we need to have a deeper level conversation first.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you. I guess I'm a statistician by nature. I guess give me the data, I'll go play with it. You know, and if I can come up with the same solution that you had, then it's great. But it's all mute if it's not actually in service of some decision that's going to be made. I mean, you can put confidence intervals on it, but maybe a hypothesis test is what I really should be doing, or you know, a simple graphic with our goal on it on a Weibull plot, and is this dot on the right side of our plot or on the left side of our plot? Are we failing before our goal or not? And you can make it very visual. Sometimes the data analysis gets clouded by, and I've seen this in presentations, is where they give you 15 slides of derivation and then they show you the result.
Like, mm-hmm.
Sometimes the support for the analysis, all right, what's the point here? I don't need to know where Weibull distribution came from and an analysis of the initial paper in the 50s. Why am I here?
Yep.
there's a lot of that happens sometimes too. And I've done that. I've actually used, you know, putting up the integrals just to confuse the daylights out of the audience and they kind of eyes rolled back in their heads and then they would just agree to whatever I proposed to get out of the room. I'm not proud of it, but it is a technique I've seen and used.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that didn't go very far because the next level was this general manager, show me the data. What are we, you know, what's the point here? I don't need all that stuff. Show me the, go to the, get to the, cut to the chase, you know, that kind of phrasing.
Yeah.
Now, another one I've run into is you see even just a calculation and it goes to 8 decimal points, right? It's 47.68284473 or something like that. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's how far out the calculation went, right? Okay. That's just clouding up. Why? What was the source data? And how can you justify that level of precision in your answer? It's kind of the one I catch people on. And it's a basic mathematics thing. I'm surprised people do it, but they do. It's like, you only got whole round decimals at the start point. You're not going to get 2 decimal points of precision in an answer at the end of the day. You're just not going to get there from here. And also it's clouding. It's conveying a level of precision that doesn't really exist in your answer. So that's another tell when I look at an analysis.
That's a really, really useful point, because a lot of non-reliability engineers are in the business of exact quantities. You can, within reason, measure the top speed of something or the weight of something,
mm-hmm.
The wavelength of something, and that's a number. And whilst there's uncertainty in those numbers, it's not really considered uncertainty. It's just perhaps called tolerance. It's just the measurement error versus a philosophical barrier between actually understanding what the true value of something like reliability after 2 years is. That's a probability. It's not a thing you can measure. You can only infer information.
Right.
And so when you have these 65 decimal places or 65 digits after a decimal place, it does it potentially will have your audience forget that there is uncertainty with every reliability analysis. And if business decisions are going to be made based on 12.679843% of your fleet failing within 2 years and not a percentage point more, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, or a percentage point less too, if they're trying to, you know, create spares or stuff like that. Yeah, it's part of any data analysis, whether it's measuring a wavelength to great precision and understanding the measurement error, it's being true to the data. I mean, I can create god-awful Weibull plots that, mm-hmm. and if I don't put the data on there or am true to the underlying data set, if I have one failure and I fit a curve to it, but I assume a beta, and I don't present that this is assumed based on, and this is the data set we had. We had 10 units and one failed. And so that gives me my characteristic life and I can draw a curve off a point in the line. I can draw a curve. But if I just present a Weibull plot without, as compared to having 4,000 units in the field and I had, you know, 8,000 fail or something like that, or had overwhelming, really good data, that gives me a very much relatively more precise time to failure distribution. And I'm trying to make a comparison between those two things. It's pretty much apples and oranges at that point. Is I'm making some bold assumptions here, and there's a lot of uncertainty and risk in this. But if I present it as a nice sharp line on a curve without the underlying where it came from, what are the assumptions under this thing? You really, in my opinion, you're just lying at that point by obscuring what you're not telling them.
So the questions you asked at the start of this podcast are, if someone comes to any one of us with data analysis that they're going to ask for our help to complete or finalize, the points I've heard us mention in this conversation are: one, what is a decision? Two, where does the data come from? Is that it?
Those are two big parts. I think there's also assumptions. Is what assumptions are you making?
Not very good assumptions, and why those assumptions are valid, such as we assuming it to have a constant hazard rate.
Yeah, our favorite. Get me started.
Or we're assuming we're getting a part in the flat part of the bathtub curve.
Therefore, it's going to be a flat part of the, you were going to just use, yeah, whatever. Let's not get in that. But I think those are, I mean, it boils down just to a couple of questions. And it exposes a real shoddy analysis or an analysis that really doesn't need to be done, even with just the first question. And then after that, it dives more into the details of the analysis and what is behind the number we're seeing, for example, and talk about a couple of points there. You know what's going to happen, though, Chris, is nobody's going to call us to look at their data now.
No.
We scared them all off, I think. It's, you know. Well, prove us wrong, though. If you're listening to this and you're looking at a plot and you're kind of thinking through these questions and have some questions about that, or would you like us to look at it, you know, let us know. We'd be happy to kibitz or look over your shoulder on this. That'd be fun. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And let us know your thoughts on this. And if maybe there's a question or two that you like using that we missed, that would probably make a really nice follow-on episode for this. But if you've got some questions or whatever, that's a great place to get in touch with us. You can also find us on LinkedIn and our About pages. We try not to be hard to find. So, we should probably sit down and ask, what makes a good podcast? That might be another question we should explore someday.
Maybe we should have asked that of ourselves before we compiled.
Yeah, there's that too. Well, until next time then, Chris, we'll have to think about it.
Absolutely.
All right. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Fred. Thanks for talking.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.